Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hey, I'm Ryan Goldemond from Mother Mother.
And I'm Jasmine Parkin from Mother Mother.
What do you want? We're going to kind of dig into the new record and some other things, but what do we want people to know about this band? And you can also lie, by the way. If you want to just tell a massive lie about, you know, you formed in a Buddhist monk, cemetery, that works too.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I even know what I want people to know. I mean, I guess there is this... This need for people to know something beyond what the music tells them, but I'm not sure I know what that is. Sometimes I try and convince myself there's something to that, but I don't really think in my heart of hearts that there's anything that I want anybody to know beyond what speaks to them via the music.
What's interesting is there are some bands that I'm there from the very beginning, like really from the beginning, and there are some bands that I join at a certain place. I joined this band with this record because I got introduced to the band through the single, and even your promo company turned to me when I said, I'd like the full record, I know it just came out, and they said, well, the record company only wants, you know, a lot of presenters to only have the single. Being at South by Southwest, seeing this band for the first time, and I kind of told you this off camera, I brought a pile of people who knew nothing. And by the end of it, they were entranced. They were like, where can I get this? I want to hear more of this. Do you have a perception when you play a show like that at South by Southwest and the crowd's going crazy that you are at a certain place in your career at this point, or do you not even think about it?
Well, at South by Southwest, one can be led to believe that they have fallen off the wherever they are in their career and have regressed.
Oh, so you see it as, that's really interesting. So many bands go to South by Southwest because they figure they're going to walk away and have that hype. They're going to get that article. So you don't consider South by Southwest a positive hype thing necessarily?
Well, I wouldn't say that because that alludes to my thinking it's a negative experience. It's just a disheveled experience. And so you are thrust into a setting which isn't necessarily conducive to presenting your band as well as a band would like to be presented, and also it's a fairly competitive and overpopulated festival, and so one can feel like a small fish in a big sea, and over the years that feeling gets smaller for us. We feel more relevant being there, but at the same time, you are reminded of your insignificance when you are in a sea of thousands of bands, you know, trying to snatch a spot of the limelight.
So do you think that maybe what you're saying about South by Southwest is because this is a harder band to pin down, so to speak, that people love to work really hard on what the genre of a band is, and this band is kind of genre-proof?
Yeah, I think that sort of always happens wherever we go. You know, it's like, what are we? And I don't know if that's necessarily the reason why you feel less significant in South by Southwest, but that is definitely a very real thing for us. You know, nobody, I guess essentially we're an eccentric pop band. That's the best way we've sort of come up with, the best way to say it, basically. But it's very hard to pinpoint. It's very eclectic.
You know, one of the quotes that I read from you in another interview, which really was poignant to me, is you said people either, and I'm paraphrasing, but you said people either love or hate this band, and you know what? Hate could be good too. That's okay, right?
Yeah, I think you want to stir something strong in people. You don't want to just be forgotten in the middle place of a reaction. We kind of obsess over the live aspect. And I think obsess in a fairly productive way. We're always thinking of ways to augment it for ourselves and hopefully for others. And never do we feel like we have come to understand it. It's a very volatile being, the stage, and so we're chasing after it, and it keeps us very busy and very modest too. I think it's a soul-crushing experience sometimes.
How do you feel when you read a review and they're like, "Oh, it's the cool-looking lead singer and the chicks"?
I feel very misunderstood. No, I mean, it's always hard to read reviews where you feel like they haven't quite pinned it. There's different levels of scrutiny, I guess. You know, like if someone's scrutinizing a band for the fact that they can sort of hardly play the guitar, it's just like a different level. So the scrutiny sort of moves up, but it still exists, you know. So then it's like, oh, well, they weren't quite precise enough, or, you know, I didn't like their arrangements, or they were, you know, not moving around enough on the stage. So it's just, it's all relative.
There is a look to this band, and that's certainly not presupposition. You pay attention to all of this, do you not?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you entertain in an aesthetic sense, then it's nice to unify ourselves.
Yeah, but you know, you could just walk out there in flannel shirts and, you know.
Works for some people, but not really for us. I think, yeah, it started that way perhaps, but yeah, we like to pay a lot of attention to the details. And that includes clothes and looks and all that stuff.
You know, this is beautiful stuff you do. Now, it does help to have an artist on the, you know, on the team. Needless to say, that doesn't hurt. To have your built-in art department. On the other hand, it probably gets tricky with the label, I would imagine, because they probably want certain things too, right?
Well, I think they just really appreciate having someone who is as skilled, proficient, and prolific as Molly to turn in the visual aesthetic for this band, and they don't have to pay her.
One of the things that I read, which was really an interesting thing, was the process, because you were 3 years between records. And you, one of the quotes that I read is that you stuck to the blueprint for Eureka, that you really did a lot of demoing. You did a lot of stuff way before you went in the studio. Now, is that new for you, or is that just normal process?
That was an evolved version of the normal process, because with All My Heart, our second record, there were some fairly intuitive demos that permeated the recording, but Eureka was a whole other ball game. Yeah, the demos, it was like a little album unto itself, the demos, and they sounded really good, and we just stuck to it. We just wanted to know every kick pattern, every synth line, every vocal harmony, so when we were in the studio we could just focus on our, I guess, emotional intention, instead of getting to the end of a take and going, oh, well, things get muddy there in the bridge, or there's crunchiness there. We just didn't want to deal with that.
Self-produced. You guys don't want to deal with big producers, but you did bring in a mixer. So what was the scoop there? Did you feel very confident, obviously, in being self-produced and not want someone to walk in there and tell you, you know, like you said, how it should sound, but then on the mixing end, you decided you wanted a certain kind of sound and went after Mike Fraser?
Well, yeah, I mean, mixing is such a crucial phase to making a record, and there's different types of mixers, and there are those mixers who mix creatively and put their own stamp and change a record that they're handed, and then there's guys who are just almost scientists. They know how to place every sound in the sonic spectrum just so that, yeah, you can turn it up and it breathes, even if it's dense. And so we wanted the latter, because we wanted to make our record just how we wanted to make it in a creative sense, and then hand it over to someone who was going to put it into place and to augment what we had already created, instead of change it drastically or put their creative spin on it. And Mike Fraser can do that, and I think he can do anything, but he knew that that's what we wanted to do, and he's just amazing. No, yeah, we wanted a good time and a loud time, but something that didn't hurt,
right.
And that was always the stress in the direction, like, let's turn this up and have it consume our world, but that it doesn't become brash or painful to the ears.
So how did you come upon saying this is going to be the next track?
I think it's a combination of everyone. Like, it's the label, it's our, you know, management, and it's the radio people. I think mostly it's the radio people sort of advising. We think this song, correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, but that's how I understand it. And obviously, if there was something we just thought no way, then, I mean, I guess ultimately we have the authority to do that, but it would be kind of silly on our part because radio people have to be behind it as well, and as well as everyone else. So it's kind of a team effort.
Yeah, usually it's obvious. I mean, it's rare in our case that there's a huge discrepancy between what the band thinks could be a single and what the business types think could be a single.
Or a signal.
Or a signal, yeah.
Are you just happy to play, or do you turn around? Because you mentioned the South by Southwest thing, that you see that as kind of a, you know, a kind of a, wow, here we are amongst all these bands and geez, you know, whatever. So how do you think about what you want this band to be, or do you just think, hey, you know what, we're making good music and we're happy playing? And that was a rhetorical question, but I'm not feeding it to you. I'm curious to know what you feel about that.
No, we have hopes and desires that go beyond where we're resting at. And we really value Canada as a market because
It's a big market.
And yeah, you can do big things there and play some amazing shows and have a really strong fan base that will provide a career for you, an everlasting career. But at the same time, we do understand that it's a big world, and we would hope to achieve what we've achieved there elsewhere and in as many places as possible and more. You know, we definitely are probably gluttonous in our desire to succeed at this. So I can't say that we're just happy to be here doing music, you know. We are, of course. It's a gift and a ridiculously privileged life that we're living. But at the same time, you want to work it. And
you said an interesting word, and I talk about this with bands all the time. You know, again, it's that levels of reality, right? It's that, okay, where do we give up the day job and this is actually, you know, being in a band is actually our job? And you said that you feel lucky that you have gotten to that moment where music actually supports you, right?
Hell yeah. Yeah, it's the crazy gift.
But actually, I have to tell you my favorite quote, which I'm definitely going to use at the intro of the show, was you described what was going on at your La Quinta Hotel, your beautiful La Quinta Hotel, as dubious looking music folk in tight pants.
that's it.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and this is how I get people into your music. It's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between. And what I do for the last 40 minutes of the show, no interruption, no jingles, no nothing. So it's 40 minutes of solid, just segued music.